Welcome to Orphans No More, a media extension of Justice for Orphans, a ministry dedicated to rally the church for the cause of the fatherless, inspiring, educating, and equipping believers to care for vulnerable children, and supporting those who have heard and heeded the call of James 1:27. Here's your host, Sandra Flack.
God sets the lonely in families. That portion of Psalm 68:6 is one of my favorite verses and very fitting for this National Adoption Month episode of Orphans No More. I'm your host, Sandra Flack. Thank you for joining us today for episode number 246. If you are a foster or adoptive parent and did not catch last week's episode 245 of this show, please go back and give it a listen. It lays a good foundation for today's show. In fact, I also invite you to listen to the FASD Hope podcast, specifically episode number 11 entitled We're Not Alone, where host Natalie Vecchione interviews yours truly. I had so much fun being the guest on FASD Hope. It's a new podcast focusing on fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. It's one of my favorite podcasts. I'm a faithful subscriber. Please check it out. Like I mentioned last week, and Natalie talks about it all the time in her show, about 70% of children in the U.S. foster care system have been exposed to alcohol in the womb. And according to FASD, I knew I was going to mess that up, but families affected by FASD, and you can find this information at faasd.org/50facts. We will post a link to that in the show notes for this episode. But according to families affected by FASD, 2 to 5% of babies born in the United States have an FASD. And we can expect similar statistics with children adopted internationally. So fetal alcohol spectrum disorder plays a huge role in the lives of most foster and adoptive families. It does mine and probably yours. And since we at JFO want to be a source of encouragement and a resource for equipping you for your journey, I'm talking about FASD and any topic really pertinent to foster and adoptive families. Before we get to today's amazing guest, I just want to check in with you. How are you doing? How are your kids doing? I know I shared a lot in last week's episode about how my son was doing, and we finally pulled him out of school and started homeschooling him because he was really, really struggling with stress and anxiety, all because of COVID and school and everything being so different. And he's really settled down quite a bit since we started homeschooling. Not perfect, but doing much, much better. And I find that my stress level has even decreased because things at home aren't quite so ramped up and polarized. But I really want to know how you are doing. So if you would let me know, you can contact us. You can reach out to us via our social media at Justice for Orphans. You can find us on Facebook, our Facebook page, and we have an Instagram account. And hey, we've got some amazing folks, Kathy and Braylon, who are doing a great job on our social media. We've really, really improved our Instagram presence. So check it out if you go on Instagram. We're at Justice for Orphans. You can also visit us on our website at justicefororphansny.org and email me directly, Sandra Flack, JFO@gmail.com. We really want to hear from you. We want to hear what topics you would like for us to cover, how you're doing. Maybe you would make a great guest on our show and we could chat about that. We could talk by phone and chat about that. Maybe you would recommend somebody that you know who would make an amazing guest because they have an amazing adoption or foster care story. We interview foster and adoptive parents, adoptees, aged out foster youth, professionals, pretty much those folks that are in the same lane. And I'm in the trenches with you. So let's support one another, reach out, and let us know how you're doing. So, okay, I opened the show with Psalm 68:6, since it is National Adoption Month, but my guest has a verse that is so applicable to her life, and that is Psalm 413. I can do all things through, I said Psalm, didn't I? Philippians 413. I memorized this verse to a little song with my children, so you think I could get it right. So I'd probably need to sing it, but I won't. I'll spare you that. Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I am thrilled to bring my guest to you today. She is an author, a wife, a mother, and an adult adoptee with an FASD. Please welcome to the show, Rebecca Tilou. Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, how are you?
I am thrilled to have you on the show today. I'm a faithful listener to the FASD Success Podcast with host Jeff Noble. I've had Jeff on this show a while back, and I know I shared this story with you, but for my listeners, back in August, I was driving and listening to Jeff's show, and I caught an episode where he interviewed you, and I was so excited to hear from an adult adoptee with an FASD, and then he said that you live in Voorheesville, New York. And I'm like, wait a minute, what? Because I know he's in Canada. So it was crazy. So I didn't drive off the road, but I was like, wait, what? What did she say again? So when I heard your interview, I knew I had to have you on my show, and I reached out. Here we are. I'm so excited. I want to let our listeners know that you've written a book about your story. It is called Tenacity. You can find it on Amazon. I did. I read it in like two nights. It's such an informative resource. If you're an adoptive parent, if you're an adoptee, if you are parenting kids with an FASD, you share your adoption story and your journey to find your birth parents, your FASD diagnosis. And I just really encourage our listeners to pick up a copy of Rebecca's book. Again, it's called Tenacity. You can find it on Amazon. But for now, I'm hoping, Rebecca, that you'll share a little bit of the story of your birth and your adoption.
Absolutely. Okay, so I was actually adopted on February 14th, 1980, is when my parents brought me home. So it was pretty cool because it's Valentine's Day. And I was born a month before in New Jersey. So a little backstory is that my parents, they had a little, I think he was a four-year-old son, and that's my brother, Brian. And then they did get pregnant a couple years later with a baby girl, Lauren, who my mom did, adoptive mom, but mom did give birth to me on, she was premature and she was in the hospital, very sick. And unfortunately she did not, make it. So God needed her for some reason. So that she unfortunately did pass away. And my parents were devastated, and they turned to their church, actually, and their church suggested adoption, and they actually went through Bethany Christian Services. So they got a phone call that I was born, and my mom had just gone back to graduate school for nursing, and they got this phone call. So they went and they met the adoption agency, and they went through all the rules and regulations of adopting. Back then they were pretty much the same, lots to do, lots to follow up on. Then they got to go meet me. And when they met me, they fell in love, and they were glad that, you know, I was a healthy baby is what they were told. And, but they had a lot of thinking to do. They were still healing from the loss of their daughter, Lauren. So they went back to the hotel because they lived in Maryland. So I grew up in Maryland, actually. So they stayed at a hotel with my brother, and they gave it thought, and they really felt, as they do today, and I do as well, they felt that God was pushing them in this direction and that I was made for them. And I believe that. So they did end up adopting me. So they took me home. I don't know if it was the next day or a little while later, but it was Valentine's Day when I came home with them. So I was considered healthy, and the pediatrician that saw me said I was wonderful and quiet and I didn't like to eat a lot, but, you know, they thought that was just me, I think. So my parents got me home, and within a month, I was very sick. I had an ear infection, bronchitis. I wasn't eating. So for the next 18 months, I was in and out of doctors. Within the first year, I had all these tests done, including testing for cystic fibrosis because I wasn't eating and I was losing weight. And it was horrible because my parents had lost one daughter and they didn't know what was going on and I wasn't eating. And I was very sick just with all these ear infections, bronchitis. But I met my milestones on time, like the walking and the talking. So my pediatrician that my parents had sent me to, or told my parents that I had some facial features of fetal alcohol syndrome, but that was in 1980. So they mentioned that to my parents. He said he was a wonderful pediatrician, but he said, I really don't know anything else. Let's just see what happens. I met all my milestones. I got tubes put in my ears, and that seemed to clear everything up. My sickness has stopped. I started eating. And so the FAS diagnosis kind of went by the wayside for 34 years. So
that is your story of how you came to be adopted into a family. And you, growing up, you knew you were adopted, right? Your parents let you know that.
Yeah.
How did knowing you were adopted make you feel? Did it affect you? Did you feel different?
So I knew for as long as I can, remember, I think my parents told me when I was four, but they always read me books even before I knew what adoption was. And I always felt like I thought I was special, which I was, but I never took it as a bad thing. Some people don't handle their adoption as a positive thing. I did. And I loved it. And I loved telling people I was adopted. My parents never kept it from anybody. And I always loved it because it was it was my story. And I am a storyteller, but back then I just liked to be adopted. It was great because everyone was like, oh, how cool. And I liked the attention. So.
Yeah. So it was a totally positive part of your life, which is exciting.
Yeah.
Now your adoption records, in your book you tell this story, your adoption records indicate your birth mom drank alcohol during her pregnancy and may have even been intoxicated when she gave birth to you, but you didn't get that FASD diagnosis until you were an adult. So growing up, what struggles and challenges did you face that you know now were because of alcohol exposure in the womb? Maybe nobody really understood that maybe it was coming from that. Maybe, you know, you thought it was from having been adopted or whatever, but how did it affect you growing up? And now you know it's FASD, even though then you didn't.
So it's crazy because hindsight is definitely 20/20. So when I was growing up, I was a very good student, which is, I guess, some people with FASDs struggle with academics. I did not until I got to college. And I'll tell that part in a few minutes. But in elementary school, I think what helped me be so successful is my parents were very loving and very structured, but not strict, just they had a huge calendar that had everything we had to do on it. And without that, I think I would have been lost. So I knew what was going to happen every day. The same with when I went to school. My classroom probably had 25 kids in it, for some reason I did okay because I do good at memorization. So elementary school is a lot of memorization. So I did very well with that. My handwriting is atrocious, but that has to do, I think, with the FAS. My fine motor skills are not so good. But one thing I struggled with in elementary school, and I'll never forget it, is learning how to do outlines, because you have to take a main part and then you have to take a subpart and a subpart and you have to figure out the details. I couldn't do it. I still can't. I cannot. And I struggled so much with it to the point that I know teachers used to just write it for me and then like be like, here's your main point, here's your sub point. Now go back and write it so you understand it. So, but that's a struggle. And that's with a lot of us that have that this brain issue. The main heading it gets so discombobulated. I can't pick out a main idea or a sub main idea. And that's due to the frontal lobe of the brain. And another thing, when I would have to highlight important parts in books, nobody uses textbooks anymore, I know that, but when we used to have to, my entire book would be highlighted because I could not take an important point and just highlight two words or three words. That was hard. That was very hard, but I did very well on tests. So it was weird. I always got A's and B's. And math was atrocious. Word problems were very hard. But like you said, I thought it was just my genetics. My parents thought it was genetics. I was a quiet kid, but I also, if I made friends, I would scare them because I would become fast friends with them and I would want them to stay overnight the day I met them. And I was very socially, I was quiet, but I was also socially overboard with a lot of people and I had no boundaries at all. But again, you know, my friends were like, it's okay. It's Rebecca. And the cues were so subtle. So, yeah.
And it's different. I know, you know, there's no one specific or a list of very specific things that every person with an FASD has. I've been sharing on this show 50 FASD facts. And yeah. So there's so many different things, and people with an FASD can have any number of them, but not everybody with an FASD looks exactly the same or behaves exactly the same way or struggles with the exact same things. So it's important for everybody to understand that, because you are doing great in school. You understand now what some of your weaknesses were and where that probably came from, where I know like my boys have IEPs and they're in special education because so many things are challenging for them. Managing money is a big one. Those abstract concepts are very hard for them to understand. Challenges with reading, so many different things. So you could have a good student like you were with just certain kinds of struggles, and then you can have students that just aren't up to grade level. And my son, who's in eighth grade, is reading at a second grade level, really because of the FASDs, the FASD and how that's affecting his learning. So it can look different with everybody, but I think that's awesome that you were so successful. And you said you did go to college, which I just think is wonderful. What was the struggle there?
So in college, I did the whole dorm thing. I went 6 hours away. I went to, from Maryland, I went to Geneseo University. It's a SUNY school and it's up near Rochester. And there's a lot of cows and there's a lot of alfalfa that they burn. I don't know why. It doesn't smell very nice, but I did the whole dorm thing and I always felt, and I told my roommates this, and they were surprised actually, but looking back, I always felt like I was friends with them, but I never felt like I fit. I would talk to them. We would have great times. We'd be friendly with each other, but I kind of felt like an outsider. They were very into looking nice, you know, like girls are, looking nice, doing makeup, plucking eyebrows, going shopping. And I would do that with them, but I was uncomfortable because doing those things, I have learned, are a lot of steps and it overloads my brain. So I obviously do it now as I've gotten older, but shopping, I was a disaster because the bright lights and there's so much to look at. So that part, socially, it was fine, but I always felt a little off. And then academically, I did really well again. because a lot of it is studying, and I was good at portioning out what to study, and I'm good at memorizing. So when it fell apart was I went for speech pathology to be a speech therapist. And I do have an undergrad degree in that, but I almost failed because you have to student teach. And that's when the cognitive thinking of those with FASD, or as with me, it's a deficit. I had to go into a classroom and I had to adapt every child to a lesson plan. And I just didn't understand how, because I'm black and white, and it was horrible. It was, student teaching was horrendous. Making lesson plans were horrible because of the putting the main idea and then putting your ideas of how you would get to that with each kid. I struggled with that. The kids, I would have a plan and it wouldn't go the way I wanted it to, and I didn't know how to adapt. And it was crazy. I almost failed my student teaching. In grad school, I did fail, actually. I never got a graduate degree. They failed me for report writing, which again, I struggled because of the, my report writing was so off the wall and like all over the place. I can write a book, which still is all over the place, but that's how I talk. But writing a book creatively, I could do in order, whereas a report, it just paragraphs and commas and what's important. I couldn't do that. And I tried to get help. They sent me to a report writing undergraduate students to help me, but they weren't in my program. So they didn't really know what reports should look like for speech. So I did fail, but I did get them to erase the Fs and put a withdrawal because I'd worked so hard. And again, they had me tested for a learning disability at St. Rose. That's where I went for my graduate work. And it came back inconclusive that I had a learning disability. My student teacher, the lady that looked over my student teaching, wanted me to get tested because she said something was going on, but the results were inconclusive and that just went by the wayside.
Yeah. And you didn't
look back. Yeah. That's exactly my FAS.
Yeah. Cause you didn't have the diagnosis at that time, but it was clearly showing up in a lot of different areas. So how did you come to know that you have an FASD? What led to a diagnosis? How did you get diagnosed?
So this story is, actually pretty interesting. Every summer, I'm married, I have two kids, and when they were little, I used to go visit my parents in South Carolina. So this was, oh gosh, right before I got diagnosed. So like when I was 33, like 7 years ago, I went to South Carolina, and I have a quick temper. I go from 0 to 60 very quickly. That's another brain thing with me. So my mom and I were talking, and we were talking about my adoption, and I had just found out who my birth parents were, or my birth mom. And we just got into a fight because I had learned my birth family. I had sent my birth cousin, a card for her birthday or something. And my mom just made a comment, "I don't understand why you can remember their birthday, but your grandmother's birthday is coming up and you didn't send her a card yet." So we got into a fight. And it was verbal, all verbal. And I just started crying. And I left the next day to go back to New York. And my mom and I were not talking. So, but she went in one plane, a different plane than I did, to take one of my kids. I forget. She had one of my kids. I had another one. So our planes landed. It was weird. In the same airport, she comes out and I come out. And we meet in this main area. And she apologizes, and I apologize. She's like, "I don't know what happened. You just fly off the handle, and I said things I didn't mean." And so we decided we were going to reconcile. Okay. So I get home, and a few days pass, and my mom calls me on the phone. And she's like, I was driving home from work. And she goes, "I need to talk to you." And I'm like, okay. She said, "After you left, I got something something in the mail from Bethany Christian Services. She's like, they get mail every once in a while for things that they're doing and things going on. So she had a pamphlet that said FASD, what it's about. And she threw it, like, she didn't throw it out. She just like put it on the side, like on the kitchen table. And then she was walking by it and she picked it up and she starts reading it. And she's like, I want to read you what FASDs are and all these symptoms that could be associated with it. So she tells me what it is. And she's like, it's brain damage due to a birth mother or due to a mother that drinks while she's pregnant. She's like, impulsivity, abstract concepts are hard, money, handling money is difficult, immaturity, and there's all these symptoms. And she's crying by the end of this, and I'm crying trying to drive home. And she's like, I think we thought your mother drank, and now I think this all makes sense. Looking back over 34 years, 33 years, I think a lot of your issues are because of alcohol from your mother. Mm. So that, with that said, I decided, because I perseverate a lot, I decided that I was going to do my due diligence to get diagnosed, because some people didn't understand why I wanted a diagnosis, but I wanted one so I could understand a lot of my issues would have a reason. And sorry, we have a train in Voorheesville that's going off right now. So I went and I looked for all the people that could diagnose adults. I found nothing in Albany. I found a pediatric pediatric geneticist in Albany. So that was Dr. Natasha Scher. I called them, and then I said, I'm an adult, but this is what I think I have. And they said, send us paperwork, send us a referral. So I did, because my primary was instrumental in getting me diagnosed. He's amazing. So I sent them photos of me as a baby. I sent my whole history to Dr. Scher, and she took me on. So it was insane.
And she did she was able to evaluate you and diagnose you?
So it was weird. So she took me in and she asked me my history, and she said, did you ever talk to your birth mom? And I said, no, I have not. And I don't want to give away the book. So no, I did not talk to her. And she's like, well, she was one that, because I didn't actually talk to my birth mom, even though I talked to friends that knew her when she was pregnant with me, said that she was an alcoholic and she drank every day. Dr. Scher said that she couldn't diagnose me with fetal alcohol syndrome or spectrum disorder because she wasn't comfortable without talking to my birth mom. But what she wrote down is fetal alcohol effects, that nobody uses that anymore. But she did say, I'm going to say you have fetal alcohol syndrome. She's like, but I, without talking to your birth mom, I cannot write that down. But she did say that. She did write fetal alcohol effects. Wow. So, I have facial features, small head circumference. So
a lot of the symptoms there. And so sometimes just knowing the diagnosis, right, we feel like we're equipped with some answers that can help us navigate life with what we know was already going on. And each week on this show, I've been sharing a few of the FASD facts from the FASD website. And for our listeners, that's Families Affected by FASD. They can be found at fafasd.org. You can /50 facts. So I've shared the first 10 in some previous episodes that we've done. I'd like to share a few more today, Rebecca, and then have you chime in on your experience, if you have any experience with the three that are the three. We started several weeks ago, so we're going to do 11, I think 11 through 13 today. So you might not have experience with any or all of them, but maybe some of them. But I'd love to hear, if you did have some experience, what that struggle was like. So FASD fact number 11 says, up days and down days are common for people with an FASD. Alcohol exposure in utero can impact memory, processing speed, stamina, and cause other global cognitive problems. For a person with an FASD, being able to do a task one day or even an hour ago, but then struggle with doing that task again the next day can be a very normal thing for them. So, Rebecca, can you relate to memory struggles? I know you said in school you could memorize really well.
Yes.
But how has that affected
memory,
you?
Yeah, so rote memory is really, like, I'm good at that. My child, I don't know what he's doing down there. I've noticed as I've gotten older, I don't know if it's an age thing too. I'm only 40, but and with all the demands that are put on me, being a mother, working full time, being a wife, my memory stinks. Like, I can remember things back to when I was like 4 and 5. I can remember everyone in my family laughs at me. I can remember the color of the juice box my brother was drinking back in 1985 and where we were, what beach we were on, what he was wearing. I can remember that. I can't remember what I did over the weekend. I don't come to me. It's hard. I don't know if that's just like I have too much on my plate. I have a lot of trouble in the past few years with word retrieval. Mm-hmm. I forget the names of things, but again, that never was an issue. So I don't know, again, if it's my brain from the alcohol because of all the demands that are being put on me. I don't know if they go hand in hand or not, but I do have word retrieval issues. My kids laugh at me all the time. So,
and I mean, we're not, you know, professionals who could diagnose, you know, you or I, but it sounds like it could be very much the case, because I know, for example, with my 15-year-old son, he'll know his teacher when he was in school before we just pulled him out. We were talking about reading. They had started a new reading curriculum, and his teacher said, well, he doesn't know his consonants and vowels. And I said, well, he did know them. He learned them. And we had homeschooled him for the first few years before, at fifth grade is when we put him in school. So I said, I taught him them at home. He knew them. But right. Yet at school this year in eighth grade, he did not know them. And I started, and now I have him home, and I have a multi-sensory reading curriculum that I'm using with him. And when I reviewed consonants and vowels with him, he knew them all. So one thing I'm thinking is one of the reasons why we pulled him out of school a couple of weeks ago is he was so stressed out by all of the changes and the new demands at school because of COVID. Things look very different in our school district. His day is very different. And he was experiencing a lot of stress and a lot of anxiety. And you know, the school day is an abbreviated school day in our district. So instead of getting out at 2, like in years past, he's getting out at noontime, but I would have to pick him up at school and come straight home. We couldn't go to the store or any place else. He'd need to come home, decompress, and then not even want to leave his room the rest of the day. So it just kind of, it got worse as the weeks went on. So a couple of weeks ago, we pulled him out, and he's doing much better. But now he seems to remember consonants and vowels. And part of it, I think, is maybe at school he was just under so much stress, his brain couldn't focus on learning. He's trying to survive these new changes in school. And then another thing a counselor once told me when we were taking him to counseling when he was much younger, she said kids with an FASD, kids with trauma, it's like their brain is a big file cabinet, and you'll file things in there. They'll learn something, they'll have an experience, they'll know something, but some days they have a hard time retrieving the file. They can't always find the file. It's in there, and some days they can find it, but they can't always find it, and that's very common.
That's a great explanation, and that's how it is with word problems with me in math. Even today, thank goodness my kids are good at math, because I would have a word problem and the only difference would be like the fruit that they used, apples instead of oranges. It was like totally new to me, and I would forget all of the how to do that word problem. As an adult, one thing that I struggle with is I will do things like I go off the handle and I yell at my kids, as all of us do. But then I step back and I'm like, I need to change the way my tone is. And that's another thing. I talk very loud and I guess I have a mean tone sometimes. I don't know. So I take a step back. I need to change it. But then I forget. Or I've done stuff in the past that had bad consequences as an adult. And I did it again and again and again. And you'd think, given the consequences, I would learn. But I would do it. That impulsivity is horrendous. And I'd do it again. And to try to explain to somebody, I don't want to use it as an excuse, but it's that impulsive behavior. And then I'm like, oh crap, why did I do that?
Yeah. And that's a very real thing. Impulsivity is definitely a real thing. And even not learning from consequences, mm-hmm. the brain is not wired, or maybe it's miswired because of the alcohol exposure, to learn from consequences. And that is something that several of my kids exposed to alcohol in the womb also are challenged by. So FASD fact number 11 also has some basic strategies for parents and teachers working with an individual with an FASD struggling with memory. Understanding that the behavior is not purposeful, providing reminders, allowing more time, giving support, reteaching. So like, this makes me think of even a conversation I had with my son's teacher, about that reading curriculum. I know he knows consonants and vowels. So in the environment, that added stressful environment is one more thing the brain has to deal with, and it can't necessarily multitask to be able to do all of those things. So that makes a lot of sense. So our next fact is a term I've recently come to know. You said it earlier, and I think I heard it first on FASD Success. It might have even been Jeff's interview with you. I've been living with this for years because it is a basic symptom in both of my boys. And I was so like, wow, it has a name. So FASD fact number 12, perseveration. A common behavior for people with FASDs. Perseveration is a repetitive and continuous behavior, such as repeating the name or word or phrase, or the inability to stop thinking or talking about a topic. It's as if the brain is stuck in a loop, and perseveration is very difficult to stop, frustrating to live with, and the strategies are individual to the individual. So you did mention, Rebecca, that you struggle with perseveration. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So it's funny, because when I was younger, I don't think I perseverated a lot, but there were times when I used to practice piano, and I played piano for years and years. And there's a difference between practicing but there would be a time when I would practice, but if I did one note wrong, I had to go back to a certain other, it was very particular. I had to go back to a certain note and then redo it. And I couldn't go back to any other note. And I remember that. I don't think my parents ever knew that. I don't even think my piano teacher knew it. But I know in my head, that's what was going through my head. I would be like, I have to go back to this point. So I would perseverate in that aspect when I was younger. And now that I'm older, I actually use it to my advantage. When I searched for my birth family, I perseverated on the information I had. And I would perseverate on what I knew and on the... I would perseverate on the websites that I would use, and I would take the information and plug it into every website, sometimes more than once or twice, thinking I'd get a different result. But I would perseverate on who is she, who is she, who is she. And unfortunately, it did take away from my family. I lost time with my family because I wanted to find her. And now I perseverate in my job because I'm a claims adjuster for the general insurance company, and I do fraud medical claims, but there's a lot of fraud with medical claims and with the population that we have that are insured by us. Not everybody, but so I use perseveration to investigate, and I will, like, if I have to look up where somebody says that they were when the accident happened, I will use anything I can, Google Maps, and then they'll give me like an area, and then we'll get to that area and I'll find something else to look up. So perseveration has worked to my advantage.
Yeah. I was going to say you're turning it around and using it as an advantage in your daily life, which I think is amazing. And I think certain career tracks, certain ways perseveration can be used as an advantage. I know with my son, I was thrilled when I learned, like, I knew it was a thing. I knew it was related to FASD. I didn't know it had a name. And not that anything changed knowing it has a name, but it's just helped me to cope better. And that road trip that I was on out to Syracuse, where I listened to your interview on Jeff Noble's show, my son was helping my husband sell a tractor. One of my sons with FASD, selling a tractor on Facebook Marketplace, because they sold that tractor, they were going to be able to buy a new tractor. So like the tractor is the thing. So all the way to Syracuse, all the way while we're at the doctor's office, all the way home, when I was trying to listen to these podcasts, and all my son could talk to me about was the tractor. We're going to buy the tractor. This guy's interested in the tractor. We're going to sell the tractor, this tractor. We got home, and all that driving, so I was in the car like 6 hours or whatever on that day. We get home and I'm like, I think I'm just going to go for a walk. And my son said, I'll go with you. And I'm like, no, don't. You cannot go with me. You have to leave your phone home if you go with me, and you're not allowed to say the word tractor or Facebook the entire walk, because I couldn't take it anymore, because he was just so obsessed. And it could look like an obsession, right? It could look like obsessive compulsive behavior. Now, he can also use it to his advantage, because he's very good hands-on. Well, I have one son with FASD who's very good with his hands and loves to build, and I have another son with the fine motor skill problems, and he hates Legos and he doesn't like to color, draw, or do anything like that. But my son who can tinker and likes to build things, my husband bought a picnic table at like Tractor Supply over the summer and told my son, go ahead and put it together. And he was out in the garage all evening until 11 p.m. and he wouldn't stop until it was done. So he could use it to his advantage. Now, he doesn't use it to clean his room, much to my dismay. So it's almost like perseveration is selective, right? So it depends on what the brain kind of gets hooked on and goes with, but it's just an amazing thing to learn. It says in the facts that it's difficult to stop. Some people report success with distraction. Some suggest talking out an issue. Some say that setting a clear boundary around the subjects works best. And then that makes me think of our son who's 15, that I talk about a lot on the show. When he was 5 and we adopted him, we brought him home from Ukraine. He kept using this word all the time. He had no English words really yet, but he kept saying this one word in Ukrainian. I finally figured out, I think that's a bad word. Like he's swearing at us or something. He just used this one word constantly. I did figure out it was an inappropriate word, but he was stuck on that word for months, and it was driving me crazy because I knew it was a bad word, right? And I couldn't get him off of the word. But then finally, I figured out if I could distract him with teaching him new words, because he needed to learn English. So I introduced more English words like water or dog or whatever it was. He eventually gained some new vocabulary and lost that bad word. And initially, I thought it was a control thing. Like everything in this little kid's world was out of control to him. He had no say in being adopted and taking 3 flights home, all the way to the United States. And he's in a new family and everything in his world is new and different. So I thought, well, maybe he's just trying to have some control. So he knows when he says that word, I flip out or whatever, but not that I flipped out, but like it would definitely, he knew he was pushing some buttons. But now I realize it was probably perseveration, right? That was, I believe that was part of it. So it's not that it makes it any better, but it definitely helps put it in perspective. So our last fact for the facts today, FASD fact number 13, when a person has a disability, we change their environment to help them succeed. Think if a person is in a wheelchair, you have to build a wheelchair ramp and make other modifications to your home if you have a child in a wheelchair. This is true for people with FASDs as well. environment can be sensory, what you see, smell, touch, hear, and taste. Environment can also be abstract, such as expectations, systems, traditions, values, and culture. So, Rebecca, you said you're a wife, you're a mom, you have two kids, you have a career outside the home. How have you tailored your home environment so that you can be successful, because you know you have certain challenges? How do you change things up?
So I will say that I have learned, I know that there's parents out there that their kids are in like three sports at a time, and it works for them. Like, it does, and they somehow make it work. I know that I can't do that. I cannot have my kids in multiple things at a time. I don't think my kids would handle it. Well, they might handle it okay. So one thing I do, and my husband's on board, he's actually been amazing, but they do Taekwondo and they do piano. Those are the two things. And my husband's amazing right now. He just took them to Taekwondo for a kickathon that they're doing. But if I keep it simple and if they're on board with it, I can handle it. I know that every morning on weekends, I need at least 45 minutes to, without anybody telling me we're going to do A, B, and C today, because I get nasty. And I finally figured out last year, that's why. I cannot, my brain overloads. So I told my husband and my kids, I don't want to hear what we're doing today. I don't want to hear, let's try this. I just need to decompress and then you can shoot it at me. I'm very open with what I need. I'm not sensory wise. I'm okay. I do like pressure though. So, I have a beagle, but he's not very helpful. He's not very heavy. I used to have a shepherd that used to lay on me and I loved it. If I get very overwhelmed, my kid's closet, we all have walk-in closets. It's a very old house, over 100 years old. But it's renovated, but the closets are still really old, and they're soundproof, not totally, but I will go into one of their closets and just sit, and it decreases everything.
Wow. So like a little safe space. So do you have a weighted blanket if you like that deep pressure?
I did. And I gave it to one of my child's friends to try it, and I never got it back, but I can get, I might order one, and then my youngest loves it too. So I think he's sort of sensory, but I do like that weight, but I don't like being hot. So it's kind of an issue. and I have calendars, but I have a problem of putting on my phone. I put something in 2022 instead of 2021. I put things on the wrong date. I try to have a paper calendar, but then I don't carry it with me. My husband is very instrumental in all this though, because he cooks, he loves to cook. I hate it. So he does that. He takes the kids to where they need to be. If, he's very helpful. He's my outside brain, mm-hmm. the external brain that I think Jeff has talked about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's wonderful to have that supportive husband, and, mm-hmm. and really helps you to be successful. So I love that. And everything that you're saying is so, I remember I have a daughter who's not diagnosed with FASD. She is adopted. She's a relative. And I remember, I would give her calendars and give her schedules and give her all these things to try to help her manage her time. And she would forget to use them. I would be like, what are you, I'm giving this to you. And when I learned about FASD because of our youngest, the more I learned about all of the symptoms and all the different things, I would think back to, this daughter came into our home in 1999. I didn't know anything. We didn't have like adoption, trauma, FASD training. We knew nothing about anything. We were just like, well, of course she'll come and live with us and we'll care for her. Her mom had passed away and we'll love her and raise her like one of our own. And we're all going to live happily ever after. And that didn't happen. We didn't understand about trauma, and she had experienced significant amount of trauma before she came to us at the age of 8. And then all these years later, she's like classic FASD. Now she just got married and she's maintained, she's 30 years old now. She's had a job since she graduated high school and she's always worked in the area of nursing homes, assisted living facilities. She's gifted with elderly people. She has a way with them. She has compassion. But she tried to go to college for nursing, couldn't, like it was too much, mm-hmm. could not navigate all of that, the scheduling, all the things. But some of the stuff she does at her job, but it's very routine at her job. There's a schedule, like all of the residents are on a schedule and she can get them ready and get them bathed and do all these things and get them to their meals. And they love her. And so she's very successful in that area, but she's tried other things and always goes back to that line of work because she's good at it and it works for her. But
that's awesome.
It's so being able to have that environment and things that can help you. I love that. So thank you for shedding so much light on FASD for us. I know I found it extremely helpful and encouraging to know there is hope in future for my kids with FASDs. I also, though, want to touch on another topic because you dive deeply into it in your book, and we don't want to give any of your book away because we want people to read it because I loved it. You were searching for and even finding some of your birth family. It's very intriguing, had me hanging on until the end as I read it. But what advice would you give first to adoptees, adult adoptees, about the process of searching and finding? Any advice?
So the positive is that many more states are actually opening records. New York just passed it a few months ago. I actually ended up, New Jersey passed it after I found my birth family. But if you can go that route, that's awesome because that'll save you a lot of time. Well, it can take a while to get your birth certificate, but that'll save you a lot of time. If you don't have that option or if you just want to search, go for free websites. I found one on my own. You do have to pay if you want like phone numbers, but usually they don't work anyway. So there's a website data. It's dobsearch.com. And you can type in by name. You could type in by birth date. And just free websites are great. Know your boundaries, though, and know yourself. I learned a lot about myself that you can get really taken in and emotionally drained. So make sure you take breaks. If you can be open with your family, I was open with my family, not at first. But I did tell my family that I was searching. I told my mom and dad, and they were very supportive. They knew I was going to search. They knew even if they said no, which they never would, that I would search anyway, because that's how I am. But they understood my need, but they were scared. They were scared for me, for what I would find out. I did find out a lot more than I thought I ever would. And I was let down in some respects. It's a lot, but they did support me. But be honest and open with them, because if you try to hide it, it's gonna bite you in the butt. And search angels are incredible. You can Google them. They search for you for free. The only thing they ask is that you pass them on. I had a few amazing search angels that helped me. And they can also be there to bounce ideas off of and be there to talk to when you just feel like you have nobody else to go to and you want to bang your head against a wall because you can't find anything.
I can imagine it's an emotional roller coaster because you're either not finding stuff or you're finding stuff that's maybe negative or not good, or you could experience rejection. You know, so there's a lot of different things. So to have a support person along the way, and you did start kind of answering my next question. You're, for adoptive parents who are listening, who might feel threatened by their kid's desire, even if it's an adult child, their desire to know and find their birth family. So how did your adoptive parents, you said that they handled it well and they were supportive?
So they did. They handled it extremely well. I think I touched on this a little in my book. I don't know if I put it in there or not. But so when I told my mom I was searching, she was in the kitchen with me, and I told her, I got a phone call from somebody I thought was my birth mom. She wasn't. She's a very nice lady. Came downstairs. My mom's like, what's wrong? You ran away. Is that the doctor? What's going on? And I'm like, oh, crap. So I told her what was going on. Her response, though, I'll never forget, was just like, oh, okay. Well, that's fine. That's fine.
She needed a few minutes to process it, probably. Yeah.
So she needed to process it. She was good with it. And she came back to me months later. Like, I think the next time they came back with a whole folder full of all the information they had, my parents had. So she was awesome. My dad was he was supportive. But once I found everybody, both of them were scared because of my personality, I think. They thought, you know, she's going to dive deep and dive fast, and she doesn't know who these people are. But they were scared because at that point I hadn't been diagnosed, but I would do things without thinking. I bought a plane ticket and ended up staying with my birth uncle that I had never met, and I talked to him once. So they were scared. So as adoptive parents, it's okay to be scared for your children. It's okay to feel threatened, but please know we're not trying to replace you, but there are things that we look in mirrors and we don't see. There's things that we see that we have no idea why. My son is 5'9" and a half. He's 12 years old.
Wow. Like,
I had no idea why he was so tall until I found my family.
So yeah, for health,
alcoholism.
Yeah, health purposes. You do want to know.
No, we love you guys, and it's not going behind your backs. We want to know what you guys take for granted.
Yeah, and I can imagine, even though I'm an adoptive mom, and I know court records for our kids in Ukraine because they were adopted internationally. Mm-hmm. We know the mom drank during her pregnancies, and we know she passed away at a young age. Mm-hmm. There's a dad. Or at least one dad probably still out there. We don't know. And then our daughter that came into our family, when I said she came in when she was 8, she was a relative. So her mom had died. We knew her mom, and her dad had fled when she was an infant. She has found him. And we were okay. It's like I can understand, like my parents divorced when I was very young, and I knew my dad, but he moved out of state and I barely ever saw him except for on very rare occasions. So I can understand the wanting to know, the needing to know, like there's this missing piece of you and you just need to know what it is. So I didn't ever feel threatened by that. But my biggest concern was that my daughter would feel hurt because basically she got rejected. She wasn't outright rejected, but she kind of all her life had this vision of, you know, anything that was wrong in her life. And because she wasn't learning from consequences, and early on we issued lots of consequences because we thought that was like the way to parent. She would, if her consequence was early bedtime for a week or whatever, she would be in her room and her mind would go to, none of these bad things would be happening to me if I just find my father and he'll rescue me from all of this. Or if my mom had not died, this wouldn't be happening to me, kind of thing. So she didn't learn from consequences, but in her mind, she'd imagined this father that she would find, and he would come in and he would save her and everything would be wonderful. And she found him and he was willing to like Skype with her, but he didn't come flying in on a white horse from the other state that he lived in and tried to even meet her in person. So she experienced another rejection, you know, and that was really hard to see her go through that and struggle with rejection again because of that. So super hard stuff, but great advice, Rebecca. And I do recommend that our listeners pick up a copy of your book. It is, the title of the book is Tenacity. You can find it on Amazon, and I'll make sure that we put the links to everything in the show notes for this episode and the corresponding blog post. And thank you so much for that insight into adoption and into FASD from the perspective of an adoptee. I love that. So before we wrap up, though, what is on your heart, Rebecca, that you want to make sure our listeners know, whether it be about adoption or about FASD or both?
So I guess what I would say to those with an FASD is, I tell everyone this, a lot of people say it, but it is true. An FASD doesn't have to define you. Yes, your brain is different. Yes, it's frustrating for everyone involved, but we just learn differently. We're going to get to the answer. It might just take us longer. That's for FASD. As far as adoption goes, I feel blessed, and I am a Christian, and I feel blessed that I was, I am part of the Kulak family, and it's just, adoption's amazing. And if I could adopt, maybe one day, it's not in the cards right now, but I am pro adoption, and it changes so many people's lives for the better, even with all the roller coasters. So, adoption's amazing. So if you can, definitely look into it, or even fostering.
Yeah, that is great. So I love that perspective from an adult adoptee. And as an adoptive mom, I would say the same thing. Adoption is amazing. And if you're called to do it, step into it, walk it out in obedience, adoption, foster care. We're all called to care and to pray about it, right? You never know. So Rebecca, thank you so much for sharing your story, your honesty, just your transparency. I know our listeners were inspired and encouraged by your message. I love your book. We'll put all the links to everything in the show notes. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was amazing to tell my story and to meet you, even if via Zoom, but maybe one day we could do socially distant coffee.
Yes, I would love that.
Because you are my neighbor.
Yeah, we're practically neighbors. I'm so excited about that. So we can actually meet in person. So we'll have to do that. But thanks so much again for being on the show.
Thank you.
Rebecca's story is such a perfect fit for this National Adoption Month episode of Orphans No More, and times in perfectly with our conversations that we've been having about FASD. I believe it is vitally important for every foster and adoptive parent to learn everything you can about trauma and FASD. I highly recommend the FASD Success Podcast and the FASD Hope Podcast. Remember episode 11 that features yours truly. Also, the Empowered Parent Podcast, the Honestly Adoption Podcast, and of course, the podcast you're listening to right now, Orphans No More. And I also want to mention the Positive Adoption Podcast. It's a 15-minute coffee break podcast with host Kathleen Guire. Kathleen was a guest on episode 244 of this show, and I'll be collaborating with Kathleen on some of her positive adoption episodes in the very near future as we discuss 5 things adoptive and foster parents should know. So stay tuned for that. I'll be letting you know when those episodes are released. And the FASD facts that I shared in this episode and some of my other ones, again, they are from FASD.org, and that stands for Families Affected by FASD. I'll post the links in the show notes for this episode and the corresponding blog post on the JFO website at justicefororphansny.org. And thank you for joining us for episode 246 of Orphans No More. I'm thrilled to have you along on the journey. If you were inspired by today's show, please subscribe and leave us a review, and please share with your friends on your social media. We really, really appreciate that. We want more people to know about the show. And of course, let us know how you were encouraged by listening. We love hearing from you. Contact us again, justicefororphansny.org. email me directly, Sandra Flack, JFO@gmail.com, and find us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. Check out our website and social media for more about Justice for Orphans. And stay tuned to this podcast and our social media about the release of my book, Orphans No More, A Journey Back to the Father, that is coming up soon. Prayers appreciated. And thanks again for listening. I really appreciate that. I look forward to being with you next time on Orphans No More.
Thank you for listening to Orphans No More, for sharing what you've heard and praying for vulnerable children everywhere. We hope you are inspired to walk out James 1:27 in whatever way God calls you. For more information, visit justicefororphansny.org.